Fighting for America.
The Republican Party is in this big, massive civil war. It's Tea Party versus establishment, libertarians versus social conservatives. There's infighting, conflict, backbiting, discord.
Fighting for Idaho.
I don't want to scare people, but waves of terrorism, stuff that we've never seen or heard before by small groups, much like Paris, I'm very worried about it, and I'm very worried about an incredibly porous border.
Fighting for you.
Thank you for having this great show on in the morning, because without it, we wouldn't have any real conservative voice out there on the radio.
Voices Mr. Right.
Like me, friend me, and we'll have a great time together.
Kevin Miller in the morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
And good morning, Kevin Miller with you here at 580 KIDO. Thank you all for joining us. Joining us now is a young man that we met when we were doing our schools, I think last year, maybe last spring, head coach of the College of Idaho, the Yotes, if you will. Go Yotes. Mike Morawski with us. Coach, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, I think we could talk, you know, you've played in the NFL, you've played in college, you've coached in college, you're coaching in college now. I think we should just turn the segment over to you because of your expertise. Let me hit you with this. You have any great stories about your days with the Houston Oilers? You know, love you blue.
The powder blue. That was quite a time. But I did enjoy the time I was there because their quarterbacks at the time were banged up. The starter was Warren Moon, and the backup was Oliver Luck. So it was fun. Good guys, and that was one of the fun things. And my brief stay there. My brief stay at lots of different places. Lots of great people in the game of football, and so I really enjoyed my time there in Houston.
Boy, as someone who has dedicated themselves to the game and to educating young people, not only in the game but in life, how special is the game of football? I mean, every Saturday, heck, every Friday, Saturday and Sunday, it seems like it's our secular religion, if you will.
Well, football is, there's something about it. I try to describe it to people, and especially in the year leading up to the bringing back football here at the College of Idaho, and there's just something really visceral about it. It just gets you in the gut, and I think at the fan level it does. It certainly does as a player, and I often have to deal with players who are either have a career-ending injury or have to give up the game for some reason or just graduate from college knowing it's their last football game, and that's a hard thing. And I say, frankly, the feeling never leaves you. You never lose the desire. There's nothing quite like playing in a football game and just the energy, the physicality and everything. So it really is a meaningful thing that I think fans tap into as well. But for players, coaches, et cetera, it never goes away. So there's something really magnetic about the game.
Coach Morawski, as we talk a little bit about the College of Idaho and starting a program from scratch, and y'all had a lot of great success with a lot of folks in the area, and it's great that we have all these wonderful colleges and universities, but it's great that the local kids can show what they can do on the gridiron as well.
Well, what happened this fall for us and the lead up to it was, in my opinion, absolutely spectacular and super exciting for the region here, the Boise Valley, because 75% of our guys are from Idaho, and it'll probably continue to that. Maybe it'll ebb and flow a few percentage points of the roster, but I think that just makes it interesting for people in the Valley, that the community of Caldwell and all over the Treasure Valley here, I mean, there's just such great excitement, and I think largely because of the Broncos and their success, and obviously there's some great Vandals fans, and so football has been a part of the culture. There's been successful football, especially at BSU and they're great, fantastic. I think, you know, one of the top 20 programs in the country for sure. There's just an excitement about it. And then we come in, and most of my time in coaching obviously was at UC Davis, and we went from Division II non-scholarship to Division I AA. But those Division II non-scholarship days were some of the most exciting days ever. I think Chris Peterson would say the same thing. He followed me by a number of years there, but there was one game that I played there against Nevada Reno when they were still Division II, just getting ready to move on. I still say it was the most exciting environment I've ever been in my life, and I've been in a couple of larger venues, that's for sure. But there is something about it being up close in our little stadium out here, Simplot Stadium. I mean, the fans are close enough to see, touch, and feel the players and the energy and kind of what college football has always been to the idealists of the world and the football purists. There's something special about it, and I think we captured it a little bit. And so there's already great excitement for next year.
You know, as casual fans of college football, and most of us have never played, but we could always give out pointers to the coaches. I know no one has ever done that for you, Coach. Giving you any...
I get all sorts of pointers, and I take them all. I see you saw our athletic director and uh-huh. some of our boosters say, boy, especially if you got calls for right. for 3rd and 15 or more, I'm more than willing to take that advice.
Right, exactly. But you know, the spirit of the game. Are we in danger of losing that? You take a look at Ohio State and Bama. You take a look at Oregon and Florida State. The highest rating. In cable television history, and you know, at the college level, it's supposed to be amateur. But is there a danger, a threat that it could become too commercialized?
I definitely think so. Though, let me say this about the playoff system: it's no surprise at all that people are interested. I think the playoffs it would be for the fans. The bowl system's kind of set up for the sponsors and the old system, and you can tell by the bowl games attendance. There's just not that many full stadiums out there. But once you get to the playoffs and a winner, I think that's the true competition that people want. And obviously it's what Division II and Division III and NAIA and Division I AA do. But to the other part of your question, I do think that. And I have no interest in becoming a Division I coach. I like being a college football coach where I'm dealing with students and faculty and staff and other sports. And my interest is in football becoming integral to the college and becoming special for the whole student body and contributing to the academic mission. It's just fun. I mean, I love it. And I often say I'm not a Division I coach. I'm a college football coach, and I really love what I do. I think I have the greatest job in the world.
Well, I think you do as well. And like I said, we're going to work on getting you a lot of suggestions for that 3rd and 15.
That sounds great.
Now, you know, before we get to the championship game and everything else, what do you make of the success? And I know this is a stretch. We're in Idaho, but, you know, a lot of people will be watching the old Division I AA championship this weekend. I believe it's North Dakota State. They've been there every year against a relatively newcomer, Illinois State.
Well, it's just a great level of football. And I know more about North Dakota State because UC Davis had a long history with those guys and have played them fairly recently too, and they have a great little home field advantage, and they are very, very well coached. I think you find at the 1AA level, especially the upper tier, there's some tremendous coaching going on, and then it's a lot of guys, as our old coach at UC Davis used to say, guys with a chip on their shoulder that think they can play at any level, and of course, you know, the NFL rosters are sprinkled with guys from every level. So there really is some great quality football at that level. So, and I tend to pull for North Dakota State. I just admire their program and they do a fantastic job, and to have the run they've had is incredible, though they do enjoy the home field advantage usually throughout the playoffs until the finals.
I was a little bummed out that Eastern Washington wasn't in it this year. I just love the red, you know, imitation's the greatest form of flattery there.
Oh, absolutely. And again, we at UC Davis played up on the Inferno, as mm-hmm. they call it, in Cheney, Washington. But they had a great team and had a great run. It's just, and I think they lost in a fairly close game and had a great year. The Big Sky Conference has been fantastic. Idaho State had a great year. So there's just great levels of football out there. And then for us, we're the only small college team in the state of Idaho, which is so different than Oregon or California and certainly the Midwestern states. So there's just a interesting mix of things that has added to our success and the interest in the area, I think.
Coach Mike Morawski with us, College of Idaho. Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580 KIDO. You know, it's fascinating because we talk about news and politics, but your profession has become quite the business, and I'm sure there are a lot of people that have said to you that, hey, coach, you're going to build this program. We don't want to lose you. And you have people that, because of the economics of the game, that they move on to other places, most notably, you know, the head coach at North Dakota State. Here was a guy that was an institution. Really, it was fascinating how he would go to Miami and to other places and get those players to come up there. And after the culture shock of the cold, they really bought into the academic process and, you know, did a big profile on him. And then Wyoming scooped him up. So, I mean, what's the mentality of the modern-day coach as far as, you know, the old days of one guy stayed one place and built an institution?
Well, I think it's there's a couple different things there. Certainly, because of the importance of football or in society, and now it's become big entertainment. There's coaches making a lot of money out there. There's a lot of money to be made at even a place like Wyoming. I don't know what Coach Bowl is making there, but I know he's making probably double what he made at North Dakota State. So there is, for the ambitious, there's the opportunity to move further and further up the ladder. And then Jim Harbaugh's contract is pretty extraordinary and has changed fast, because I coached against him when he was at the University of San Diego, a Division I non-scholarship school, very, very good program, but he was there for 3 years and did a great job, and then Stanford 49ers, and now to Michigan and the top-paid college coach. So it's just extraordinary. Now, there's also, with that, there's the firing mentality, you know, the scapegoat mentality of college presidents and boards of trustees and athletic directors, where, hey, if you don't produce when you're getting paid that kind of money, we're going to run you out. So it's become kind of a brutal business. I mean, it's not just coaches leaving, but it's you win or you're gone. So it's interesting that if you get to a place, perhaps even like Boise State, I don't know for sure what their culture. I think Coach Harsin seems very, you know, dream job and that sort of thing. But if he's super successful, he'll get opportunities at other places. And then if he's not successful, he'll get run out of town. And I think coaches begin to know that and realize you just have to do the best job you can. And it's always a little disconcerting to me that it's boosters sometimes with deep pockets that control the hiring and firing sometimes.
Well, and what people don't understand is that, you know, you have a family, you have a mortgage, you have to pay the bills like everybody else. And, it, you know, on one hand, we want the coach goes to the player and says, look, I want you here, I'm going to be here. And then we expect the coach to turn down an economic opportunity that could better themselves because they've made a commitment. And then all of a sudden, the money drives everything. The donations dry up and the coach, well, you were a good boy, but you've got to go. It's you know, it's funny. I have a gentleman in Eagle. His name is Shaw. He runs a pharmacy. And he always says to me, he goes, you know, Kevin, I would never do your business. But when we go inside beyond the glamour and the fame of your business, it's pretty cutthroat.
It really is. And I think you have to just, I mean, I tend to be philosophical about it and say that's just the way it is. That's what it was inevitable because we live in an entertainment-oriented society, and football is big entertainment. So I don't have any problem with coaches making a lot of money or players, because it's what the market bears. But it does trickle down, and there's a lot of it's not an easy job. It's a fun job, but those other stress points of having to please certain people, especially if they're nameless and faceless, where you're just trying to match up to some standard, is always difficult and everything. But sports just happens to be more public. It's just, you know, in living color. I mean, coaches, when they get together, will sometimes joke, boy, and my livelihood's in the hands of 18, 19, and 20-year-old guys.
You right.
know? So it's always difficult. But that's the fun and the challenge of it. But that's where I don't have any desire to bounce around. And I think that's where I understand it, and that's kind of the somebody once told me, well, Jim Zorn, who was a very successful quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks and coached all over the place, including was a head coach with the Washington Redskins, but he once told me one of his many stops when he was at Utah State, I think he said, I think, Mike, I think to get hired in a job, coaches actually like to hire guys who've been at a number of places. And I thought, that's interesting. That's just not my deal. I was at Davis for 25 years, and I plan on being here till the end of my career. You never know what for sure is going to happen. But I just like being in one place where you get to know people and get to know an institution. And so what I'm saying is, you have to know what you want and who you want to be, I think, and that's sometimes difficult for young guys. But take a guy like Mike Sanford at Boise State. I mean, he's just a great, young, upcoming coach, and I think that staff is full of guys like that. And once you have some success, then people come knocking. And he has a track record of being at Stanford, and the Vanderbilt coach is has ties at Stanford and knew Mike, and it's just no surprise. But I think fantastic that he's sticking around for a while and wants to, you know, be part of building something here at Boise State. So he, at least as a young guy, has knows kind of what he wants in the short run.
Well, Coach,
in your trust every morning, Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning. Coach Mike Morawski with us, College of Idaho here. Coach, hit me with it. What do you think is going to happen Monday?
I think I'm kind of pulling for Oregon, and I think they'll be give Ohio State some real trouble.
Ohio State's in trouble. That seems well, I guess we could have said that about Alabama against Ohio State. Do the Buckeyes have a chance?
You know, I think they do. I mean, they have – all those teams have a conglomeration of the greatest talent, but I think – Oregon will put some stress on them. My analysis of the Ohio State-Alabama game, I was a little bit surprised at a number of the mistakes. It wasn't a super clean or dominant performance. Great football game, but just lots of back and forth, lots of mistakes, few penalties, few turnovers, that sort of thing. And Oregon has the capability, like they showed against Florida State, where if you make a couple mistakes on a couple series, you find yourself 24 points behind in a hurry. So I just think they have a good mix of guys. I think Oregon's better on defense than people give them credit for. And but I always hope for a great game, too. I'd love to see an overtime thriller, you know.
How has the score-again offense changed the face of college football? And is it really different from the old K-gun offense in the early 90s with the Buffalo Bills?
I think it's similar. I think it's some of those same things. And I think what a number of college coaches have been able to do is empower the quarterback either by signaling from the sideline or having a special guy. And it seems that Marcus Mariota is the best of what Oregon has ever had. And that's why I think it's all coming together for him. But in terms of changing, it just really makes it tough on the defensive side. It's just not hard to line up, but it just cuts down the variety of things that the defenses can do. And there's lots of reasons for that. You have to be willing to have your own defense on the field for a long time. So TCU, I think, is an interesting study. Their coach, Gary Patterson, one of the great defensive coaches in the country, he forever wanted a slower offense so the defense could shorten the game, basically, you know, run the ball, run the clock, and then you got a great defense, and then they'd lead the country in defensive statistics. But I think what he found is he couldn't win the big games, and so he went to the more of an air raid, fast paced offense. And though some friends of mine that know Gary and coach them, part of the reason was so he wanted a fast-paced offense so he could learn to defend it better. So that's he's just an interesting personality in college football. But I think it worked for him, and TCU was so impressive in their win over Mississippi. I think people have to think, boy, maybe they might be the best team in the country too. But back to the fast offense, it just puts such pressure, especially when you got great skill and you got guys in space, fast receivers or running backs on bubble screens and option football. It's exciting too. I think it's fun for the fans.
Well, could we be seeing, let's say if your prediction holds correct and the Ducks win, not a renaissance, but the Ducks becoming the perhaps whether it's the dominant force or the new in thing in college football. And I see that. I've studied the program since Chip Kelly got there, and it just seems that, you know, you have your traditional powers, you have, you know, the glamorization of the SEC. And then if you're looking for an alternative, you have Gary Patterson, as you said, that's done a great job with TCU, and perhaps they might be there one day. But are the Ducks the alternative to, you know, business as usual?
You know, I think so. And the one, you know, because I hadn't really studied Oregon that much, because I was kind of in a different frame of mind. My background was in the NFL, and while we were at Davis, it was more of a NFL style of offense. And but when we got here to the College of Idaho, we realized we're going to have all freshmen. We may not be able to match up at all up front. How are we going to move the ball was what the question we began to ask. And we realized we have to create mismatches. We have to get two on ones, double teams, if you will, and be willing to run the quarterback. So we recruited quarterbacks who could run. And so we got into this option and spread, and it's new for me. But then we tied into some Oregon film and studied them and realized, wow, these guys don't just have an offense where they're throwing it around and going fast. They are very, very well coached. That's some of the fun stuff that we as coaches get to do, is different than a TV broadcast, watching and rewatching film and seeing why and how people are doing what they're doing. And we realized, one, Chip Kelly is one heck of a coach and putting that system in order. And I think what I saw this year of Coach Helfrich is, they're better this year than they were last year in some of their design and detail. So there is a spread offense craze and fast offense, and I think people will move to that, I think. But the real intrigue of it is, how do you do it better than anybody else? And I think that's what Oregon somehow is doing. It still gets down to coaching at its purest form of teaching and creativity and finding a way to get it across to the players so that they can execute it at a fast pace. But I think Oregon is incredible and maybe a click or two ahead of other people. And I think you have to be. Plus, they got great athletes. They got great speed. So they're just as fast as the fastest teams in the country.
Coach Morawski, College of Idaho, go Yotes. We appreciate it. And we'd love to have you back, sir.
Thanks, Kevin. I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Have a good day.
Okay, you too.
Okay, bye-bye. There we have it, Coach Morawski with us. It is 7:33. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Dave Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Men, 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 manly men, 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 manly men, men, men.
Men, 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 manly men.
Men, 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 manly men.
540, Kevin Miller with you here. A little wet, a little snow on this Monday morning. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Kevin.
Yeah, we take a look at a few things. Now, I have to admit that I have something that has been stuck in my craw for quite some time.
Ooh, let me get my pliers out.
Now, you've known me for 27 years.
Got about 24.
Now, if I'm wrong, I usually admit I'm wrong, correct?
Given time, yes.
Now, You seem like a fair guy, right?
Sometimes.
Now, will you admit when you're wrong?
Oh, yes.
On this very segment.
I'm wrong most of the time.
Now, that is like an MVP clip. However, it's very rare that I catch you factually mistaken.
Oh, good.
What a way to start Monday with. And this is what I you asked me what I did this weekend. I had a dream about you and the station.
Oh, well, it's because that's probably here.
No. I had a dream. I had a dream about you, and we were working on things, and I had a dream about Sean Hannity that I was doing some stuff with him.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Yeah, so back to, yeah, you're right. Anyway, back to...
No, that's good. You and Sean.
Yeah. Anyway, back to what I was trying to talk about. Remember, we've had this discussion for 27 years about whether or not the governor cut education.
Mm-hmm.
And you said that the governor didn't. He cut the spending.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I remember that argument, and I remember you and I got into it pretty heavy on Friday, correct?
It wasn't heavy, but yes.
Yeah, it was emotional. It was passionate. But I can recall, and it reminded me, somebody reminded me over the weekend that Actually, I did talk to the governor about that, and he admitted on this program that they did cut spending.
Okay.
Because I used your I followed your direction. Mm-hmm. I said, well, governor, I heard you didn't cut the education budget. And to his credit, which I don't know how many politicians will actually admit when they say, oh, no, Kevin, you're wrong. I did. Do you see how much of an impression you make on me that I was obsessed with?
I know. What are you thinking?
I went back to, okay, never mind about what I want to yap about or getting back to that. But so will you admit that you were wrong?
I could have been. I haven't researched it since then, but I do know that if...
Oh, my gosh. The governor said that he had cut the budget.
I believe, and Ray Amaya corrected
no,
me.
No, that, no, no. Hold on. No,
are you going to allow me to speak or not?
It's just you and me. When you get in trouble, you always go, well, I talked to Ray.
No,
it's just you
Ray
and me.
Amaya. Would you let me talk?
Boy.
Ray Amaya corrected me that morning and said, no, that year, every budget in the state was cut.
So when were you going to make that public proclamation?
Well,
that,
I'm not
going to
blurt in the middle of your show. You get all grumpy when I do that.
No, or even an email. I was right and you were wrong. I admit when I'm wrong many times.
Well, you just told me you didn't want me bringing Ray into it, and I told you Ray corrected me that morning and said, no, budget was cut in every state department that year.
However, before Ray was here, the governor admitted that he had done that. You should have remembered that. I should have remembered that.
What, every word the governor says?
Yes, because he's the king.
He's not the king.
Well, he's going to make his proclamation today.
Well, hello. Okay, at 1 o'clock, which we'll carry here.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that a proclamation, the state of the state?
I guess it could be considered a proclamation,
I mean,
guess.
What's he going to say? Hi, everybody, I'm back. I'd love to see him do some stand-up. That'd be some entertainment value for all of us.
Well, there you go. I don't think you'll see it.
Anyway.
I'm hoping it's quick and brief.
Why?
Because I don't want to hear it go on and on and on.
What do you got against the governor?
Not a thing. Mm. I just hate political speeches.
Hmm.
Probably about as much as he hates giving them.
I don't know. He seems pretty fired up.
Well, you must have spent quite a bit of time with him this weekend, him and Sean Hannity.
I watched him on Facebook, all the big people going to the governor's ball.
Were you sitting at home spying on people on Facebook?
I was posting. I'm sure you saw the work I was doing this weekend.
Nope, I didn't have much time for Facebook this weekend.
No, I'm talking on the websites.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was quite active. So anyway, at 580K IDO, big news with the NFL playoffs. Peyton Manning, pretty much done.
You think he's done? I mean, he's still better than most quarterbacks, but you think he's done?
You're a Peyton Manning guy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a Peyton Manning guy. I don't know if he can come back from that. I mean, basically, the first couple years, nobody touched him. This year, people roughed him up.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like what the Ravens tried to do to Brady. And that's the MO. You rough up these quarterbacks. Rough up anybody.
The way it used to be.
Right. Well, look, they popped Brady a few times. One guy kneed him in the head on Saturday.
Yeah.
And they didn't call it. I mean, you throw Peyton Manning to the ground a few times, he's a different guy. The same, that's what the Giants did to Brady, and the Ravens tried to do it.
It's the way it used to be.
Well, right. And then you take a look at, you know, his arm strength in the last half of the season seems to have diminished mm-hmm. even more so.
And he does not play well in cold weather anymore.
Yeah. And you have to wonder how good he was to begin with since he played indoors all the time. Now, would half the teams or three quarters of the teams pick him up? One would be, I think, Tennessee. But I would be worried about his health. And John Elway has to take a look at it. Big deal in this week's Sports Illustrated. Mm-hmm. Elway needs another Super Bowl. Then I started to think, you know, the three greatest quarterbacks of all time, in your opinion, who would they be?
Number one, Dan Marino.
Mm-hmm.
I think Favre would be up there. Then you might have to go old school with a couple of guys. I'm not sure. Those would be my two. And then maybe Joe Montana.
Mm-hmm.
Those would be three of my best picks.
Right. How I'd rank them is Bradshaw 1, Brady 2, Montana just because he won 4 Super Bowls, 3. I'm not a Joe Montana guy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was the king of the – and you could make an argument, and as much as I hate to say this because I think that Terry Bradshaw is one of the most underrated quarterbacks ever, that Tom Brady could be number one.
He would be in my top five.
Yeah.
As I dislike him, he would be in my top five.
I'm saying he could be number one, and I can back that up simply by Joe Montana had Jerry Rice, he had John Taylor – he had Roger Craig. He had a machine. Terry Bradshaw had, what is it, 11 Pro Bowl, Hall of Famers with those Steelers, plus, I think, again, another underrated coach, which would be Chuck Knoll. Mm-hmm. Tom Brady, who did he play with? Teddy Bruschi?
I don't think Teddy caught too many passes.
Right, but you know what I, you know, and one could argue that if Gronk and Hernandez had stayed together, who knows how many more rings they would have won. But I look at it just based on that. I mean, Brady did not even, they didn't even attempt to run in the second half against the Ravens. That's crazy. Not even one run. I again, call me what you will. I just got to believe that there's an argument. Five Super Bowls, winning three. And I like John Elway. I thought John Elway was the best ever. But, you know, on pure talent and grit, I got to say Brady's number one just based on his wins. And what now, he had three more games than Montana as far as playoff games, but he has the most touchdowns now. I gotta put Brady at one. Reluctantly, because I think, again, the disadvantage that Terry Bradshaw has, that Dan Marino has, even though he never won a Super Bowl, was the game was a lot more physical. Now, people will argue that the athletes are better. Okay, but pass interference was not it. I mean, Mel Blount would clock somebody coming across the middle. I mean, it was a much more physical game, and defensive backs were allowed to play defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't compare. You can't compare Marino to Peyton today, because what if Dan Marino worked in the keep your hands off the quarterback era? Huh. He would have been killer.
Well, you're right, and Marino and Favre and other people that and Brett Favre, you talk about tough and durable.
Mm-hmm. But yet he's another one, much like Peyton Manning. Those years he tried to come back with all those teams, he didn't play well in cold weather. And I think it's an age. I think it's an age thing.
Right.
You know, you get in your late 30s, and I'm sorry, cold weather affects you more than when you're 26.
True.
So I think that is part of it. But, yeah, Peyton Manning, it just didn't happen. So, yeah, the teams I was kind of hoping for something, you know, for better things to happen out of it. I've never been a Dallas fan, but I kind of wanted to see him do it well because there's three Boise State Broncos that could have gotten rings. I would have liked to have seen Ryan Clay to get a ring. He may not get a ring now.
Well.
So that's kind of, you know, where
well, at 580KIDO, you take a look at Dallas. They had an opportunity, several.
They did. And you could cry about one play, but much as I said with Detroit, one play does not make a game or not.
Right.
If you allow one play to make a game, you probably didn't deserve to be there.
Right.
But you know what? Didn't do it. Green Bay did it. Aaron Rodgers did it. I just really don't want to see a New England-Seattle Super Bowl. I just don't. I've never, and I can't tell you why, but I've never cared for the Patriots. I just never have. Maybe it's the old Boston Patriot logo on the side of their helmet. I don't know.
I love that. Patriot Pete, Patriot Pat, whatever his name is.
I just have never been a New England
fan. No wonder you don't like me.
Yeah, it could be it. You wear that New England sweatshirt all the time.
I have a ton of them to wear between now and the Super Bowl.
It reminds me of the cheater.
I don't. You know something, and by the way, how brilliant is Bill Belichick? How brilliant is Bill Belichick that he uses the old ineligible system or player where he has, what is it, Vereen go up there to the official. And basically, somebody did an article about it over the weekend. Alabama had done it. Chip Kelly had done it. Where you have four offensive linemen. He goes up and has Vereen declare himself ineligible. The Ravens, the Ravens. Such a strong defense, didn't know what to do. Vereen pedals back because he can't go out into the play. They don't know who to cover. And then John Harbaugh just cries about it. And I love what Tom Brady said afterwards. Should have known the rules. It's in the rule book. Deceitful. Isn't that what offenses try and do when they call a screen play or something like that?
Well, sure.
Deceive the defense.
You know, it's like those that go to Boise State. Those are gadget plays. You should know the rules. And take advantage of them, just because you don't take advantage of them. I mean, you know, so give them credit there. They dug into the bag of tricks. Take advantage of the rules.
Right.
So I can't fault them, but
I think it's brilliant.
I just have never cared for them.
You never lived. I mean, that's such a great franchise as far as you take a look at where they were. They almost were, the league owned the Patriots for a while. Victor Kaya bought them. Remember Victor Kiam with those goofy razor ads and stuff?
That would be Norelco, yeah.
I liked it so much I bought the company. And then he bought the Patriots, and he went under, and they were done. And Bob Kraft came in, and Bob Kraft and Parcells did like each other, as you know. And then, Bob, how many NFL owners do you know that they had a chance to go to Hartford and get a big stadium paid for, blah, blah, blah? He didn't want to be at Cleveland, so he didn't leave. Paid for it himself.
There you go.
Does that make you like the Patriots?
No.
Oh, man. I just love great coaches. Speaking of which, tonight, who are you going with?
I got to figure Oregon's going to win this one. So I'm going with the Ducks. Even though I'm an Oregon State alum, I'm going with the Ducks.
There's some effective analysis.
Well, you know, you got to hate them. If you're a Beaver, you got to hate them. But I want a West Coast team to win.
Man, I can never win with you.
Why is that? What is there to
you
win?
You don't like the Patriots. You don't like the Ducks. I'm wearing my Duck paraphernalia today.
Yeah. No, I don't hate the Ducks, but I went to Oregon State.
Well, I think
if you go to Oregon State, you can't. Do you like Auburn?
I think that explains a lot about our relationship. I think that explains a lot about our relationship.
Do you like Auburn?
Do I like Auburn? Well, my best friend's an Aubie.
Well, there you go.
I don't like that.
I've heard that excuse. No, some of my best friends are from Auburn.
Yeah, weren't you at the? Yeah, you saw me get into it with those people from the Air Force. Was that you? Or was that the political?
You got into it with the Air Force?
Yeah, we were
You'll
sitting
lose
there.
That one.
No, not really. We're sitting there. We were a bunch of young kids. Remember at Boise Music Festival? Yeah, you did. You instigated that one. When they go, hey, we're Auburn people.
Oh, I think I did instigate that and walk away. I forgot.
And I go, yeah.
Hey, look at him. He's where, hey.
Yeah,
see
he's an Alabama guy. Yeah,
I forgot about that. Yes, I did instigate that. You're right.
So anyway, so you're going with Oregon. I wouldn't count out Ohio State. I just think I've seen a change in Urban Meyer. Oregon obviously the favorite. I think it's a pick 'em game personally.
I don't know that Urban has had enough time with just a week. Now, obviously they've been preparing more than a week. I mean, everybody goes, we take it a week at a time. Well, no, they don't. They've got people on the staff that's, ahead of the game. But I just don't know. With Oregon's offense, I think it takes a little more than a week to really prepare for them.
Right.
So I just don't know that they've had the time. But we'll see how it goes. I hope for a fun, competitive game. I don't want a blowout. I do not want to. If it's a blowout, I'm done. I'm out of there. I'll go surf Facebook and see if I can see pictures of somebody with the governor or something.
That's reassuring.
Yeah. I hope for a fun competitive game. I think it would be good for college football.
Right. Well, since you asked me what I thought, I think it's going to be a close one.
Did I ask you?
No, but it is time for you
to do some traffic.
Yes, sir.
All right.